Hey Central Ohio, the nationwide Children's Marathon will be taking over the city on October 18th and 19th. COTA riders can expect significant reroutes throughout the city. Operators will be working tirelessly to assist COTA customers. That's October 18th and 19th for the nationwide Children's Marathon. Expect significant reroutes downtown. You can view real-time updates on the transit app or at COTA.com. That's COTA.com. Good luck to all the runners.
Happy Hallows, rioters, and welcome to a very special Hallowed Riot, with tales and songs to assist you as you mount your broom and head out to your Samhain gathering. As is tradition, I've written a very special story just for the occasion. But first...
Hi, this is Meg Elison. I'm the author of The Book of the Unnamed Midwife and The Book of Etta. I'm a science fiction and horror writer, and I won the Philip K. Dick Award in 2014. The story you're about to hear originally appeared in the Daily Californian's weekend edition, and it's called A Mystery in the Webster Tunnel. Alana was going to be late. Traffic was backed up way beyond the mouth of the tunnel, and she had left the house with no time to spare. It was days like this that she hated living on an island. It's barely an island. A stone's throw from Oakland is all. Alameda gave her just enough distance from the freeways and the city. She loved her little house on a street with a nautical name and a sunny atrium off the kitchen. Some days she just had to put up with a sea of humanity trying to wedge itself into the Webster Street tunnel, all in the same 5 minutes. Alana put on the radio and listened to a helicopter confirm what she was seeing before her own eyes, and then to Taylor Swift. She wondered if there was an accident in the tunnel. That'd be the worst possible thing. Traffic seemed to clear all at once. The car in front of her pulled away so quickly that she wasn't ready for it. She didn't look up from her phone until the silver Prius behind her beeped its ineffectual little horn. She hit the gas and rolled forward, catching up. She was in the tunnel in seconds. White tile bounced orange sodium light between two lanes of traffic. The sound of engines echoing made her turn up her radio, but it was all static under the bay. The curve of the tunnel made it hard to see where the traffic had stopped again up ahead, so she was a little nervous. The Prius cut around her, and she thought the driver might have flipped her off. She didn't look long enough to tell. Something else caught her eye. Walking up the path behind the wrought iron guardrail was a man. He seemed much too tall. She told herself it was the distortion of the enclosed space. He wore all black, with long black hair that ran straight down into his collar. She couldn't see his feet. She realized she had the pedal all the way down and wasn't even looking ahead. She hit her brakes just in time. Just some weirdo walking the tunnel. Get a fucking grip. In the mirror, there was sweat on her upper lip. Traffic had come to a complete stop again. She tried to wait it out calmly, but she watched the rearview constantly, waiting for the walker in black to catch up to her again. He never did. She drove the rest of the way to work with Taylor Swift on blast, trying to put him out of her mind. Alana's 8-hour days were long behind her. She had met with a client over lunch that had turned into 3 hours of drinking and intense negotiation. She tag-teamed it with her best friend Amrusha, but by the end of it, they were both exhausted. They stayed in the office pounding out the contract until long after 10. Amrusha tied her belted trench and wrapped her thick, glossy hair into a bun. "Well, at least there's no traffic at this hour. You want to drop me at BART?" "Sure, it's on my way." "You sure you want to take the train? I could just drop you off at home." Alana was suddenly nervous about the drive home. "I love that, except Pradeep thinks that everyone who drives me somewhere, male or female, is fucking me. He'll pick me up at the station." "Oh my God, when is he ever going to get over that?" "When I get pregnant and quit," Amrusha said, smiling. "You gonna?" Alana felt the headache of a midday hangover waiting at the back of her neck. "Nope. He'll get over that about the same time my mother does. Good luck with that." They walked out of the building together. Alana dropped her friend off at the Embarcadero and watched her walk underground. She got on the freeway and headed for Oakland. She turned her thoughts to utterly normal things. things that would keep her out of that crawly feeling she had when she had seen the tall man in black. She tried to remind herself of the reality of scary things that were more real than something that just spooked her. Cancer, IRS audits, industrial accidents, natural disaster. As her car rolled down into the Webster Tunnel, she accelerated. Divorce, bankruptcy, being homeless. No other cars were in the tunnel. Alone, she gunned it. And there he was. The same impossibly tall, hulking figure, walking this time toward the island rather than away. All black and wet, heavily soaked. Long black hair, long black fingers. As she passed, he turned his face toward the blur of her car. Don't look, don't look, don't let him see you looking. Oh shit, he has no face at all. She was driving too fast to be safe, and the steering was hard to control. She gripped the wheel with both hands and slowed down, getting over into one lane again. In the rearview mirror, no one was there. She was alone in the yellow echo of the tunnel. In the morning, Alana got up before dawn. She hadn't been able to sleep at all. She told Jackson she was up with reflux. She got dressed, and her hands shook too badly to button her shirt. She made a cup of coffee and got into her car. If I see him again, I'll just stop. I'll put on my hazards and just stop and stare at him. He's just a homeless guy. I'll feel sorry for him, and then I'll get to work. She found the tunnel as deserted as it had been the night before. She drove until she was halfway under the bay, waiting. She felt the pressure of the water all around her. She saw nothing. She slowed down. Alana came to a stop and put on her hazards, turning off the engine. She craned her neck in every direction, looking for the man in black. She rolled her windows down, listening. Just as she started to feel crazy, she saw the bouncing red lights of the motorcycle cop coming toward her from the Oakland side. If he ran his siren in here, it would deafen them both. He pulled up beside her window. He was young and tan, with the look of someone who worked out for vanity alone. She smiled nervously. "Ma'am, is there something wrong with your vehicle? Do you need assistance?" It just stalled for a second, but I think it's okay now. She had played helpless and dumb for a traffic cop before. She turned the engine back on, and it started right up. "This really isn't a safe area to..." His eyes were unreadable behind his aviator sunglasses, but she thought he was looking just past her, to a spot behind her car. What the hell is that? Alana turned her head to look, and the lights went out. She didn't scream because she couldn't draw a breath. She felt something was crushing her windpipe, keeping her from inhaling. The motorcycle cop's flashlight beam was on, waving wildly, searching for something behind her. She saw below that. He held his gun. He walked behind her car, barking orders to someone, telling them to get on the ground now. She couldn't look, she couldn't breathe. She heard sounds like when she cracked the bones in a roast chicken. She heard wet, gasping breaths. She heard screams the way they sound underwater. She clawed at the window button and couldn't remember how it worked. She drove out of the tunnel without turning on her headlights toward the dim, pearly glow of dawn. On the other side, fog drifted over the Oakland Harbor. She pulled over near the mouth of the tunnel, gasping, raggedly staring, waiting. Maybe the cop went back the other way. Maybe he went out to the island. Maybe he went to get backup to get out. She thought about calling 911, but she couldn't make herself do it. She watched as the light flickered inside the tunnel and kicked back on. Cars came through in dribs and drabs, but no motorcycle cop. On the news later, she heard that a member of OPD was reported missing. Saw his tanned face on the screen. She drove 30 miles out of her way that night and took the bridge from the south to get back to Alameda. She went to the public funeral for the officer when they dragged his bike out of the bay and found enough of his body to know he had died. Alana never took the Webster Street Tunnel again.
Faster than I did. Can you hear the forest calling with low and The Haunted Oak by Paul Laurence Dunbar. Pray, why are you so bare, so bare? Oh, bough of the old oak tree. And why, when I go through the shade you throw, runs a shudder over me? My leaves were green as the best, I trow, and sap ran free in my veins. But I say in the moonlight, dim and weird, a guiltless victim's pains. I bent me down to hear his sigh, I shook with his gurgling moan, and I trembled sore when they rode away and left him here alone. They charged him with the old, old crime and set him fast in jail. Oh, why does the dog howl all night long? And why does the night wind wail? He prayed his prayer and he swore his oath, and he raised his hand to the sky. But the beat of hoofs smote on his ear, and the steady tread drew nigh. Who is it rides by night, over the moonlit road? And what is the spur that keeps the pace? What is the galling goad? And now they beat at the prison door. O keeper, do not stay. We are friends of him whom you hold within, and we fain would take him away from those who ride fast on our heels with mind to do him wrong. They have no care for his innocence, and the rope they bear is long. They have fooled the jailer with lying words. They have fooled the man with lies. The bolts unbar. The locks are drawn, and the great door open flies. Now they have taken him from the jail, and hard and fast they ride. And the leader laughs slow down in his throat, as they halt my trunk beside. Oh, the judge, he wore a mask of black, and the doctor one of white, and the minister with his oldest son, was curiously bedight. O foolish man, why weep you now? 'Tis but a little space, and the time will come when these shall dread the memory of your face. I feel the rope against my bark, and the weight of him in my grain. I feel in the throe of his final woe the touch of my own last pain. And nevermore shall leaves come forth on the bough that bears the ban. I am burned with dread, I am dried and dead from the curse of a guiltless man. And ever the judge rides by, and goes to hunt the deer. And ever another rides his soul in the guise of a mortal fear. And ever the man he rides me hard, and never a night stays he, for I feel his curse as a haunted bough on the trunk of a haunted tree.
Take air into your lungs, just scream. hope that won't come.
Death is a lady, he told me, pulling his red coat tight as we walked closer to the burning neon hand in the window across the street. She greets you with a kiss and takes you down below. Come on, you don't believe that, right? Death is the skeleton guy on the horse with a sickle, I replied. Believe what you want, man, but my mother, my grandmother, they take it seriously. Death is a lady, and you're supposed to bring her gifts every year. What, like it's her birthday or something? I asked as the door swung open and a little bell rang. No, he said quietly. Some say it's because she protects you, and some say that she gives the gifts to your ancestors. Oh, that's kind of nice. Like trick-or-treat for dead people. Something like that. But my mom said if you give the right gift, La Muerte will do you a favor. What kind of favor? Depends on the gift, I guess. Give her a coin, she'll keep your pockets full during lean times. Give her some bread, you won't be hungry, that kind of thing. Neat, I said, distracted by the weird statues that lined the cramped shelves of the little shop. Grotesque skulls painted to look happier than any dead guy had a right to look. Herbs and beads and something that smelled like musk and damp perfumed the air. How is your mom, by the way? Any news from the doctor? Still asleep. She's waiting on a miracle, man. We fell silent and waited. It was late, and we had drunk a little too much at a party and decided that, given the time of year and all, we should waste some money at the fortune teller we pass every day. His idea, but I could use the laugh, so I agreed. It wasn't long until a lady came out from the poorly lit doorway in the back of the entry room. She pushed aside one of those cheap beaded curtains that should have gone the way of disco a few decades ago. Guess she didn't get the memo. She looked at him first and held out a slender hand. He looked down at his phone and asked if I wanted to go first, muttering something about calling the hospital. I agreed and sprang from the chair. She held his gaze for a long moment and then extended her hand to me. I followed as she turned and led me down a dark hall. I must have had more back at the party than I thought because the hallway felt too long for the tiny building. But eventually we came to a little room. It smelled sweet and stale. She gestured to a chair and sat opposite. The table was layered in old cloths and lace. Do you like sweets? She asked. Her voice was like the echo that gets lost amongst trees on a windy day. "Sure," I replied. She pushed a bowl forward that had that kind of sugar-coated candy that could have been purchased last week or 3 decades ago and you wouldn't know the difference. I thanked her, but didn't take a piece. From the back of her chair, she pulled on a kind of shawl. I couldn't tell if it was red or black or blue in the light of the single candle burning on the table, but it was dark, and she drew it over her head and shoulders. Then she picked up a sheer cloth and covered her eyes, tying the ends behind her head. "Let's begin," she said in her airy voice. She held her hands out to me and waited until I reached over and interlocked mine. I began, "How does this... When you were 7, you pulled a girl's hair. Her name was Janelle. She cried and kicked you. When the day was over and your class boarded the bus home, she walked home rather than sit near the boy who made her cry. Being so young and so upset, she lost her way and found herself on an unknown street. She thought she recognized a familiar house. When she tried to run to it, she was struck by a car rounding the corner. She is here with us tonight." As the lady spoke, I had seen every detail. First, as though it were farther away, a reflection in a mirror at the end of a hallway, but by the end, it was as though I were both the girl and the driver. Gasping, I jerked my hands away and said, "How did you know that?" I'd forgotten about her. The lady was silent, simply leaving her palms open and welcoming. I was too curious not to continue. I laid my hands in hers. Another vision began, less fuzzy this time. "When you were 19, you pretended to be more drunk at a party than you were. You let a man kiss you just to see what a man's lips would taste like. You decided in the moment that you liked the taste and pressed for more, but before you could continue, someone stumbled through the door. You pushed the young man off of you and punched him and called him a foul name. This time you were the one running into unknown streets. Later, you touched your lips and touched yourself, wondering what that night meant. It was less than 6 months until that young man was found hanging from the ceiling in his dorm room. And when you heard the news, you muttered a curse word and cried in a bathroom. He is here with us tonight." I hadn't realized I'd started crying. But the vision and the smell and the booze had all begun to work on me. I was sure I had just been in one of those standard white cinder block dorm rooms, staring through my own dead eyes. And also... been the janitor looking up at a dead boy, called in to ferret out the smell. "Are you sure you wouldn't like something sweet? If you want to continue, I recommend it," she said, offering the bowl again. I took one of the candies. I put it to my lips, and it tasted like fresh fruit, like sugared pastry, and like the cinnamon and honey milk my mother used to make for me when I couldn't sleep. I took a moment to breathe. I was trying to remind myself that I was drunk and further convince myself that I couldn't be sure what had been the brownies at the party. I took a long look back at the lady across the table. I couldn't see her eyes anymore from behind the sheer cloth. The candle wasn't enough light to see anything, and it was playing tricks on my eyes. Her shawl seemed to go on into itself, like a dark sky with glinting gold stars for thread. After a moment, she opened her hands up to me, and for some unknown reason, I decided to continue. I placed my palms on hers. 11 months ago, you fell in love, only to watch her fall ill 3 months later. She told you to go, and you stayed. She told you to grow, and you remained rooted. She grew thinner and paler, and you held on to the kind of hope that only true love can grasp. You spoke simple words at her funeral, and her family told you they would welcome you as a son. It has been 2 months, and you have not heard from them, and you are worried you will soon forget what color eyes she had. She is here with us tonight. The vision had been a crystalline film reel of the last year of my life, and it ended with the last time I'd seen her in that hospital room. I was looking through the eyes of my beloved as I kissed her before a nurse would come to tell me that the family wanted to be alone during the final hours. The vision held after the lady stopped speaking, and I sat there reliving that last kiss over and over in my mind's eye. Her eyes looking into mine, her weak neck raised as high as her body would allow, beckoning one final kiss. My lips reached forward and met hers. I opened my eyes to see that they were the lips of the lady, and she had removed her veil. His knee bounced up and down nervously in the half-collapsed chair in the entryway of the little shop with the neon palm in the window. He kept looking down at his phone, watching the minutes slowly change, gripping his red coat nervously. Before long, however, a slender figure stood in the doorway leading to the back. She held his gaze for a moment, then bowed her head. When nobody walked out behind her, his stomach sank, but he rose shakily and turned to leave the fortune teller's shop. As soon as the door closed behind him, his phone rang. He answered wordlessly. A voice on the other end said, "It's a miracle, man. Your mom's awake. The doctor thinks she's going to recover." He hung up the phone and, without a glance back, continued into the night. Well, rioters, I hope you enjoyed this very short and sweet and spooky Hallowed Riot. Blessed Samhain. Happy Halloween. And may your witch's new year be filled with magic. Love and light. Firelight.
Hey, Central Ohio, the nationwide Children's Marathon will be taking over the city on October 18th and 19th. COTA riders can expect significant reroutes throughout the city. Operators will be working tirelessly to assist COTA customers. That's October 18th and 19th for the nationwide Children's Marathon. Expect significant reroutes downtown. You can view real-time updates on the transit app or at COTA.com. That's COTA.com. Good luck to all the runners.
Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.5 billion back to our customer owners over the last 9 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.
Big color, bigger savings. It's Sherwin-Williams' biggest super sale. Get 40% off paints and stains October 17th through the 27th with prices starting at $29.39. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online to have it delivered or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.